Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Where are we?
We are in Richmond Park. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. There's a bit of blue sky, which is encouraging. It's cold, and I thought. So you're going to start this with Polar Explorer complaining about cold in May.
And who are you?
I'm Ben Saunders. I don't really have a sensible job title. I'm usually introduced as a polar explorer, which sounds like I've been beamed out of the wrong century. But I've spent 17 years leading polar expeditions professionally.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So where should we head? That's a good question. Towards Box Hill. I'm not sure about the hill itself.
Come on.
You're going to get all my excuses now. So first of all, obviously, I've hardly touched my bike in months.
Let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
How did you happen upon the career of being a polar... Well, you don't like explorer, do you?
Yeah, I don't know what I should be, really, yeah.
A polar adventurer.
I think adventurer sounds a bit weird. It sounds like I sort of swig Red Bull the whole time and...
Polar challenger?
Every
athlete?
I don't know. I've no idea. I mean, athlete is probably most accurate because I do... see myself as a weird sort of athlete, yeah. and that's the appeal for me. You know, these trips, I'm not trying to find out where the South Pole is. That's all been done. So
yeah.
For me, these are all about human limits rather than geographical ones. So, but yeah, I never really thought it could or would be a career. You know, my first expedition was 2001. I was 23 years old. I thought, you know, the opportunity came along. I met this guy, Penn Haddo, who ended up leading that trip. And it felt like opportunity of a lifetime. And I thought it would be a one-off, you know, extraordinary experience. Never did I imagine I'd be doing it for 17 years.
Did you instantly fall in love with being in the poles?
I fell in love, but I also came home. We didn't get to the pole. We were trying to get to the North Pole that year. We got two-thirds of the way there. I came home feeling utterly... thrashed by the whole experience, completely in shock. I was 23. I thought I was pretty fit, thought it was pretty tough, and it was so humbling. I came home just utterly crushed by the severity of this place, the intensity of the experience, yeah, just how bloody hard it was.
And in terms of preparing for that and the training, what did you do? And I'm assuming cycling was a big part of that.
Yeah, cycling's always been part. I've always loved cycling since I was a teenager. This is probably one of the last few months, probably one of the longest periods I've had mostly off the bike in years. So you'll hear me puffing up the hill now.
Yeah, we're going up the biggest climb in Richmond Park right now, 8%.
Yeah. So I've always loved riding bikes, and this is back when cycling was a weird thing to do.
A bit like Arctic exploration.
Exactly, yeah. So, and I've always loved the fact that on a bike, I think it's good for what I do, it's good mental preparation as well as physical. You can really suffer on a bike.
Yeah.
You can, it's quite solitary in many ways, especially if you're training. Yeah, a lot of miles on your own, tough winters. So a surprising number of parallels, really.
Do you think the seeds were sown when you were a teenager riding your bike and thrashing yourself around for your later life?
I think so. Yeah, there's some kind of screw came loose. I spent a year up in Scotland after A levels. What should have been a gap year and I'm still on it now, age 40, which I never made it as far as university. So I worked for a guy called John Ridgway, who was, along with Che Blythe, they were the first people to row across the Atlantic, 1966.
Yeah. I wonder though, just to slightly go off at a tangent, these people like Penn Haddo and John Ridgway, are they almost sort of running away from normal life? Are they sort of trying to escape something?
Yeah, I've often thought about that. Someone asked me recently, like, who do you think is more courageous? You know, someone like you who gets to these brilliant journeys, or the sort of 9-to-5 wage slave who's, you know, looking after his kids and his family. And I don't know, I mean, it's a tough one, really.
Where are they going? We're going left. I'm a semi-wage slave, Ben, to be honest. I don't feel like a hero.
Yeah.
But just coming back to the sort of the upbringing, I know that you sort of dabbled with going to the army, didn't you? You went to Sandhurst, didn't finish that. I relate to that because I almost went into the forces and started the process of becoming an officer in the Royal Marines.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And went down to Limpston and had a sort of introductory week training there when I was only 16.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you, I love being outdoors and I love the fitness.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand being shouted at by corporals.
Yeah, well, it took me a little bit longer to figure that one out, but I ultimately realised I didn't like being told what to do. I did not respond well to authority. So that was... That was my big lesson from the army.
Yeah.
But I think I went into it thinking that it was the natural career path. That's how one ended up doing what I aspired to do eventually. Most of my boyhood heroes had been in the army.
Yes.
Ranald Fiennes, John Ridgway was para, Special Forces. Chris Bonington was in the army.
You decided it wasn't for you, and then you embarked on this.
Yeah.
This
left the army age 21 to the. I think shock and dismay of my mum and, you know, sort of close family who I think were hoping that I'd finally figured out what I wanted to do and I'd make something of myself. And yeah, leaving the army, age 21, no money, no job, nothing, thought I was a lost cause.
It's not exactly the ocean of solitude round here that, that being in Antarctica
is. Really not. Now, I mean, I part of me loves extremes, as you'd probably expect, and I love big cities and I love complete wilderness, and actually suburbia does my head in a bit.
Well, we're in the thick of it now, aren't we? Yeah. We're heading out to Surrey. We're just coming through
Molesey,
yeah. Heading towards Esher. I mean, it doesn't really get more suburban than this, my friend.
We'll have a few cul-de-sacs out here.
Yeah, so you like the contrast, do you?
I do.
Living in the thick of it.
I mean, I'm always slightly surprised by the fact that I've lasted nearly 20 years in London now. And I mean, London it's just an amazing city. There's a lot going on. No matter how weird the things you're into, you know, polar exploration, whatever it is, you're guaranteed to find a few other people that are into it. So it's an extraordinary place. And for me, it's been a good hub. It's an easy place to get away from. I live, and I'm west, obviously I'm Richmond, so close to Heathrow. On a clear morning with no traffic, I can be from my bed to the airport in less than half an hour, you know, 25 minutes. I've also just, i.e. less than 24 hours ago, entered a race called the Dragon's Back, which is late May next year, so just over a year's time.
Where is it?
In Wales, and it's a running race. It's called, well, they call it the toughest 5-day mountain race in the world. And it's 5 days from the very north of Wales to the very south.
Across Snowdonia.
Right across all the hilliest bits in the middle. So it's, I think it's about 300k, 5 days. And it's got more than 15,000 metres of ascent. So that's basically climbing Everest twice in 5 days.
It does sound like you're in a bit of a period of transition there.
Very much so.
Your wedding coming up.
Very much so, yeah, yeah.
You're looking to the future.
Yeah.
So let's reflect then on the expeditions. And like you say, you set records. You walked 4,500 miles in total
yeah.
at the poles. when you sort of look back, what are the most difficult memories? What are the times when you thought, I can't do this anymore?
Yeah.
Because inevitably there have been failures, and you sort of embraced that a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Well, I did. There's an interview came out in the FT recently, and they slightly misconstrued something I said about failure, which was...
Put them right here, then.
I've always aimed so high with each expedition that invariably I've fallen short. Like, I've never achieved everything that I set out to do on each expedition. I've always aimed as high as I could, often trying to do things that no one's ever done before, arguably the toughest places on Earth. And to start with, whenever it was, 17 years ago, I think I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder. You know, I felt like the sort of young upstart in
this. Points approved.
Yes, yeah, very much so, yeah. And there was a lot of ego in my motivation, a lot of wanting to test myself and prove myself and make a name for myself in this field that's, you know, dominated by some pretty iconic characters. Historically, you've got, you know, Scott Shepperton, Amundsen, Nansen, even recently you've got people like Ranald Fiennes, you know, Guinness Book of Records calling the world's greatest living explorer. So you're kind of taking on these giants. And I definitely felt, yeah, like I was the sort of newcomer and yeah, I had something to prove.
And what do you eat?
So, well, it's fairly high tech. So breakfast and dinner are in a bag, freeze dried, add water from melting snow.
Same every day?
A bit of variety, not much. I think we had 5 different meals. And then during the day, you don't really have lunch, but we have 6 breaks. So 6 sort of gulps of hot energy drink, and 6 normally bars. We've had a few things, but there are quite a few things on the market now. This whole paleo thing has led to some really good stuff for us. So there's a company called Primal Pantry, I think they're called, who do a bar that's made of sort of high fat nuts, so kind of macadamia nuts and cashew nuts and things. Do you want to go straight here or left?
Take a left, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get techie here on the macros.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd assume doing that kind of effort, and certainly doing an effort on a bike, it's you're taking on carbs as you're going on, but I guess with the effort being slow and steady, do you then take on more fat and protein because you will burn it differently?
Exactly, yeah. And there's still been a bit of guesswork. I mean, despite the fact there's so much science now around endurance, we're doing something that's so weird. You know, we're doing 10 hours of exercise a day, 7 days a week for 3.5 months. Like, we had 3 rest days out of 108 days.
And what do you do on a rest day?
And they were only rest days because it was too windy to move.
So just simply Scrabble?
Well, mostly you're petrified because there's a storm going on. So it's not relaxing. You don't recover very much because you're worried that the tent's going to get shredded any second and the poles will break, and, you know. So you're definitely not recovering properly. There's a sort of calorific deficit the whole time. You're losing weight. I lost 22 kilos in 3.5 months. I put on 10 beforehand, so I sort of fattened up before the trip.
Yeah.
And came back totally emaciated. And in a way, sort of classically overtrained. Should we get doing it straight? Or
Straight, let's go straight.
Yeah. You know, if you told any athletic coach that you were planning to do 10 hours of exercise a day, 7 days a week, with not enough food, not enough sleep, they'd say you're nuts, you're going to get injured, you'll fall apart, you know?
Yeah.
And that's essentially what happened. It took, you know, I came home February 2014, you know, put on weight very quickly.
Did you?
With no science behind it at all. I just stuffed my face.
Ice cream and pizza, everything,
any opportunity. Of course, had zero appetite for doing anything physical. So I just sat around, stuffing my face. So very quickly started to look relatively normal again, but physically kind of, and mentally, like emotionally, I was really shattered.
One line I heard you say, which really resonated, was when you were solo heading towards the North Pole, yeah. There's the realization that you're up there on your own and all the world's troubles were beneath you, were below you. Which, I mean, I guess the only equivalent that normal people could feel is when they're up in a plane and they look down, or, you know, you hear astronauts say the same thing as well, don't you?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, even being on my own last year, which was, you know, 2 months, well, 52 days, not quite 2 months in Antarctica, I think there was something quite special about just escaping reality in some ways, escaping news and gossip and social media and Trump's tweets and, you know, and
we've just gone over the M25, that, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Now we're out in the countryside.
Threshold for a proper ride.
Yeah.
Crossing the motorway.
Doesn't mean the traffic's died down, but I think we're hitting rush hour.
Yeah, we've had a few beeps and a few people getting grumpy.
Well, I kind of wish I was in the Antarctic right now.
Yeah.
Although, I do wonder about how do you get used to the cold? Do you like it?
Yeah. Good question. There's something quite special about it. I don't enjoy being cold, but equally I don't mind the cold. I've always loved the snow. I always, as a kid, would get excited when it snowed. So there's something, some screw loose somewhere.
When you're there, do you lose your bearings a bit? Do you find yourself thinking, you know, every which way is south? You know, I can't sort of go. It's almost mind-blowing, really.
It's quite surreal. So navigating away from the poles is interesting. Someone asked recently, how did you handle being lost? Did you ever get lost? I said, in some ways, I'm always lost. I'm just trying to get to this point, 90 degrees north. But it's not like there's a path I've got to follow. I've just got to keep going north. So the ice is drifting around the whole time. You're very rarely on this exact straight line.
Yeah. Should we do box? We've got time. What do you think? Quarter past 10. Be rude not to.
Yeah. Go on then. I'll struggle.
You'll be back in good
struggle.
No, we're going. Let's just go at this pace. Your pace. Ben on box has a nice ring to it, I think.
Yeah.
We're almost there anyway, aren't we? Let's get the scent out of the way. We'll give the chat a rest for a couple of moments.
I'll tuck him behind you down here.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is that a track stand? Good track stand, sir.
I'm like Zoolander. I can only do them sort of pointing right.
Yeah.
If there's a little bit of an incline. One trick pony.
I can't turn the other way. What's he called it? Is it counter turn or something?
Yeah.
He can't counter turn.
So I'm gonna be stuffed in front. I can only track stand towards the sort of camber, the
the wrong way. So when you're back here, are you thinking, I wish I was at the poles? And when you're at the poles, are you thinking, I wish I was back home?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, if there's a big trip coming up, we'll get more and more excited as I'm counting down the days. And then invariably, when I start an expedition, normally day one or evening number one in my sleeping bag, in the back of my little diary, little notebook, I start a sort of a, like a prisoner scratching on the wall of his cell, a sort of a tally of how many days here until I get home. So, and very quickly you start fantasizing about really mundane things like having a bath or sitting at a table.
We like box, don't we, Ben?
We do, although I'm not feeling very fit.
I think we're doing all right, time-wise.
We're trying, and it is a beautiful day. It was pouring rain yesterday, and now we've got dry roads, spread of sunshine. Happy days.
Let's just should we have a little breather at the top?
We've got plenty of time, so we could.
Yeah, good.
If you can grab a coffee here if you want.
Brilliant.
A bit quieter.
It's on me. I love this place. I haven't been out to box in a while. I think we've picked a good day for it, actually.
Yeah. Most nice when you don't have a sensible job.
Yeah.
You can sneak out mid-morning on a Thursday.
Yeah. Are they the upsides of effectively being your own boss, is you can kind of call your own shots on
this?
Exactly. Yeah. Are the downsides then when things aren't quite going to plan, it's down to you to make the decision to bail?
Yeah.
You know, those times when the weather has been abysmal and you've had to sort of say, look, there's no point going on here. I mean, you talked about Henry losing his life.
Yeah.
That has to be the back of your mind.
Yeah, I mean, Henry basically called for evacuation flight. Yeah, he was 3-4 days away from finishing the trip. He'd been out for 10 weeks, so within a hair's breadth of finishing. Called for a pickup. He was unwell. I remember thinking at the time, what a wise move, having the kind of wherewithal to call for help that close to finishing, good man. And thinking he was fine, he was high and dry. They picked him up very quickly. They had a weather window, got him back to the coast, got him back to Chile. He was in hospital in Chile a day or two later. So we all thought he was fine. And then
he was compos mentis at the time.
I think so. From what I've heard, yeah. I mean, physically pretty weak, but conscious, compos mentis, basically airlifted to hospital in Chile. And a day later was dead. And he died of peritonitis, a sort of acute abdominal infection that normally comes from a ruptured appendix.
Right.
In Henry's case, it came from a stomach ulcer that ruptured. And
that he just didn't know about.
I mean, presumably would have felt pretty ill and pretty knackered, but obviously wasn't aware of exactly what was happening. And I mean, even here in the middle of Surrey, if you have a ruptured stomach ulcer, you're in trouble. So it wasn't necessarily the case that it was Antarctica that did him in, but certainly the severity of the journey and the physical mental stress would have been exacerbating factors, whether or not it was a sort of pre-existing condition or whether it came on when he was out.
Yeah.
But it was definitely sobering, and I did an interview on the satellite phone while I was out there, and journalists, one of the broadsheets, said, well, is Henry's memory, kind of inspiring you when things are tough to sort of push a bit harder? And I said, you know what, it's the opposite. It's encouraging me to play it safe and not take any stupid risks, and reminder that when you're on your own, the safety margin is that much slimmer. There's not much leeway.
No. I also wonder, do you oscillate between reflecting on how frail humans are, especially in the, in how gigantic Antarctica is, but also how you can push on through and that mental determination can take you to new heights?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a strange experience. I think this is part of a weird part of the appeal for me. I often say that if you were parachuted into the hottest desert or the deepest jungle in a pair of Speedos, you'd live for a day or two, you'd be all right, but the Antarctic plateau or the high Arctic Ocean in sort of early spring, minus 40, pair of Speedos, you'd be dead in a few minutes. So there's something, to me, there's something quite special about being able to survive, being able to operate out there completely self-sufficiently for weeks, months at a time, on the contents of this little life support system that you're dragging behind you, So I think in some ways I'm like a frustrated astronaut. There's definitely an element of of, you know, the still the little kid in me that dreamt of going to different planets. And this is about as close as I'm going to get, really, I think. But, yeah, it's a funny mix because you feel very aware of your own... and mortality sounds a bit grand, but you're definitely aware of your own warmth and having to kind of shepherd that and keep it going and in a place that is... I often imagine myself as a tiny little, almost like one of those thermal imaging things, this little pinprick of warmth in this massive, like, deep blue expanse of deep frozen cold. And it feels like, particularly Antarctica, when it's very windy, it sort of feels like it's trying to steal your heat the whole time. You're quite precious about it. So it's a hard thing to try and explain, but you feel, on the one hand, you feel very vulnerable, and then on the other hand, it's weird, like looking at my knees, my ankles, my hips, thinking, God, they've done a hell of a lot of mileage now, and it's physically pretty tough, you know.
Do you worry about the long-term effects? Hip replacements and that kind
not
of thing.
Yet, not yet. Yeah, ask me in 10 years' time.
You can tell I'm obsessed with the aging process, yeah, can't yeah. you, Ben? It's playing on my mind. Cycling to Surrey and back, not going to the South Pole.
I don't know. I'm still, in a sense, yeah, getting injured kind of before I got ill, pre-marathon, getting injured. I tore my calf, just stupidly did a 5K, hadn't warmed up properly a couple months ago, and that was sobering because I've you know, touch wood, I've been fairly lucky on the injury front for years and years and years, and that was part of me. I think once you cross that 40 threshold into your you know, fifth decade, like it's all these little question marks start popping up, like, ooh, was I just unlucky or am I just getting old and knackered? And, yeah.
I tell you what, the other sort of bit about what you do, and I'm not sort of grasping here to compare it with cycling, but there has to be an obsession with kit, with both things.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't
no,
there?
There are, no, and there are so many parallels. And yeah, with kit, and in some ways, like cycling, with saving weight as well. Not so much. I know in pro cycling, like your own weight is important. For me, it's almost the opposite. I've got to beef up before these trips. But
you need the warmth.
But exactly, yeah, and the stored energy, stored calories. But the lighter the sledge is, the less I'm pulling or carrying, you know, the higher my chances of success. So I've become absolutely obsessed by saving weight in the sledge, whether that's freeze drying the food to remove any moisture, or yeah, sledge itself is carbon fiber, Kevlar, the skis were composite last year, the sledge, the tent, cut the mosquito nets out, no mozzies in Antarctica, replace all the metal tabs on the zips with little bits of cord, save weight, cut the handle off my toothbrush, cut all the labels out of my clothes, so I get really obsessed about it. And
you're a weight weenie.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yes, in polar terms, definitely. Part of it is probably just placebo, like knowing you've been that obsessive about attention to detail is for me, certainly means I'm more confident starting. And I've always loved it, ever since I was a scout, you know, going camping for the first time, you know, sort of packing my rucksack. I've always loved that, loved the gear and the equipment and the clothing. So that there are definitely some parallels with cycling. I've always loved gear.
And that'll carry on whether you're heading to the poles or not.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It was a whole new, looking at this ultra marathon next spring, there's a whole new gear obsession now with running vests and hydration things and trail running shoes and GPS watches.
And now you've been through the cycle so many times, and obviously you've got great support from sponsors who've known you over several years. Is it easier to keep those relationships just ticking over, or maybe pull in some new support for the running or whatever? Does it get easier to do the whole thing?
In some ways, it does, yeah, and it has. But in other ways, I think as I've got more ambitious, that, you know, the budgets have scaled up and up, and these projects have become more complex. So it's in some ways, I'm in this sort of weird limbo state right now, where I've got a few ideas, but I don't have like a definite plan. I'm not on a sort of timeline counting down to another departure for the poles. So in some ways, I'm under less pressure right now than ever. But in other ways, I'm also aware of, and all these big brands now are doing more and more marketing online. There are more and more sort of self-styled influencers who have enormous audiences, and I have a following, but I've never really done much sort of deliberately to try to sort of build those audiences. And suddenly you've got these influencers coming along who've got enormous audiences. They haven't really done anything.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That's the thing. They haven't done what you've done.
But it's so. So I sort of, part of me feels quite you know, sort of I have to try to justify my which probably sounds daft, but with these sponsors, in some ways I have to justify my you know, carrying on this relationship with them.
The spin-offs for you have obviously been the inspirational talking and the TED Talks you've done, and I wonder, as part of that, are the more interesting stories the ones more when you've come up short or something's gone wrong? Do you find that the failures perhaps throw up the more interesting observations on life?
Yeah, I think so, and I think also people mistakenly assume that I'm sort of wired differently, and I don't experience, I don't know, fear or self-doubt or laziness or procrastination or any of these entirely normal human things that we all wrestle with most of the time, you know? So I kind of make a point of explaining actually that I've had to deal with these things the whole time, and even standing in Scott's hut feeling this like huge kind of imposter syndrome, like what on earth am I doing here, like how did this happen, you know, or being dropped off in 2004, you know, ski solo to the North Pole, thinking, you know, I'm just absolutely petrified. I've been so busy for 18 months, you know, trying to make this thing happen, and hadn't taken a minute to reflect on the enormity of what I was about to do, and dropped off. Everyone else climbs back in the helicopter, door slammed shut. And I'm sat there thinking, stood there on my skis thinking, you know, how can I make this stop? Like, how can I get back in the helicopter? So there's always been a sort of moment of I don't know, kind of commitment with each big expedition. And there's often been a moment of feeling completely out of my depth. And
final question, Ben, with the wedding on the horizon, where does a polar explorer go on honeymoon?
Yeah, well, I was very jammy. So a friend of mine has a place in the Maldives, believe it or not. So she invited Pip and me out in February when I came back to Arctic. She was like, just come and defrost for a bit. So we had this extraordinary week on this island in the Maldives in February. So I just thought, you know what, I can't top that really on the honeymoon front. And we've got like sort of an 8-day window, so we didn't want to do some huge long haul flights. So we're going to Menorca.
Beautiful.
I've never been.
Take the bike.
I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if I will. I think we'll just have a very chill week of doing not much at all. I think they've got these sort of bikes with baskets on at the hotel we're going to, so there may be a bit of pedaling, but I'm just going to have a week off really. And looking forward to it. I mean, I love, as I mentioned, I love Mallorca, and a few people have said, "Oh, if you like Mallorca, you'll like Menorca." It's like Mallorca sort of beamed back about three decades and just very chilled. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
It's a long way from the South Pole, Ben.
It is. Yeah.
Thank you so much indeed.
Pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.